Today, the war of words over terrorism. My guest is Peter Bergen, the first person to do an interview with Osama bin Laden and expert on the subject. Peter, you used a word in a blog post this week, nonsense, which I haven't seen you use, at least in public, that often. You were talking about this sort of war of words over the root causes of terrorism. Tell me what you meant by nonsense.
Right. Nonsense, well, you know, I mean, it's a tempting kind of fallacy to think that everybody who's attacking us or anybody else must be poor and dispossessed, but the evidence that academic research has done over the past decades indicates that just like every other revolutionary movement, the people involved in terrorism are often not the dispossessed but the empowered. I mean, just a quick look through the leadership of Al-Qaeda, bin Laden, the son of a billionaire, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda now, a surgeon from a prominent Egyptian family. And the list goes on and on. Mohammed Atta, the leader of the hijackers on 9/11, the son of an Egyptian lawyer who studied for a doctorate in urban preservation at a German university. And then just look in our own country, Major Nidal Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter, who was both an army major and a psychiatrist, and it came from a family of restaurateurs in Virginia, comfortably middle class. And, you know, the picture you get is terrorism tends to be conducted in the name of the dispossessed, but often executed by people who are, you know, hardly people who are coming from madrasas. And that all makes sense because madrasa graduates are sort of functional idiots who don't speak English. It's not the sort of skill that gets you past customs at JFK or allows you to pull off some complicated plot.
Well, let me backtrack a bit. What you're talking about is this week's Confronting Violent Extremism conference that President Obama led, and it's all about, you know, is it terrorism or is it extreme Islam, and, you know, are we allowed to say anything bad about a religion? You know, when you boil it down, is this a war of words as opposed to a war of terrorism?
Well, I think there is a sort of war of words. So there is kind of a semantic aspect to this. I mean, everybody knows that this is, you know, that everybody involved in these attacks are saying that they're doing it in defense of Islam, and I mean, just that's just a fact. And just as, you know, the people involved in the Crusades were doing it in the defense of Christianity. I mean, you've reported on Christian fundamentalists involved in terrorism in this country, like Eric Rudolph and others. I mean, Eric Rudolph, who, of course, you know, blew up a bomb in Atlanta, was part of the Christian Identity Movement.
Or Timothy McVeigh the guy who he followed, the whose name I'm blanking on, the author of the crazy book that McVeigh loved.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, the point is that, you know, you can't take the ideology out of terrorism. I mean, they're doing it for a purpose, unless they're complete anarchists. And so, you know, Eric Rudolph believed in certain, you know, very, very, very kind of obscure Christian beliefs, and that explains why he attacked lesbian nightclubs and why he, you know, took it upon himself to blow up a bomb at the Olympics in Atlanta. I mean, and probably he had some other things going on wrong in his life. But the point is that there is an ideological component to this, and you just can't take that away. And ideologies are often religious in nature. They tend to sort of claim that history has a purpose and direction, and that ISIS certainly believes this and believes that they're bringing, by their actions, they're bringing the kind of final end of days closer. They have a very apocalyptic vision. But it is based on certain texts that are Islamic.
Now, is this political correctness run amok, or is this just a desperate attempt not to anger important allies?
You know, I think it's really, I think if I'm the government, I might make the same, the United States government, you know, our popularity in countries like America is very unpopular in a lot of the Islamic world. So, you know, I mean, the U.S. government may be just calculating that, you know, let's try and, you know, not add any kind of additional ammunition to this particular kind of debate. But, you know, and there may be some, you know, it's hard for me to assess what whether this is sort of PC-ness gone amok or not. But, you know, if I was in the government, I might make some of the same kind of gestures. But the point is that what's interesting is that in the Islamic world, there's a good understanding that this is a perverted form of Islam that needs to be countered by Muslims, and that's a debate that's sort of already happening. And
Is it, though? I mean, that's the question. I mean, you know, you and I have both expressed, you much more publicly than me, obviously, you know, that this is a war that can only be solved by Muslims, you know, amongst themselves. And yet, you know, being a moderate Muslim is awfully difficult thing, and it's hard to find a lot of examples of successful efforts to stop what's, you know, the recruitment effort, essentially.
And the problem is, you know, and this is a lot subject for a longer discussion. I mean, there's no Vatican in Sunni Islam, and most of these terrorists are that we're concerned with are Sunni terrorists. And so, therefore, it's, you know, it's hard to, like, speak as one voice. But, I mean, anybody listening to this can go online and see that multiple Islamic clerics have stood up and make statements against whether it was the attack in Jordan or, you know, the you know, any kind of the worst terrorist atrocities. You will see that there was a lot of people speaking out. The problem is that...
Is anyone listening?
Well, I mean, some people are listening. I mean, and also, this is a kind of, you know, this is not something that's going to change overnight. And, you know, these groups tend to be their own worst enemies because they tend to do things that are very self-defeating. And, you know, burning the Jordanian pilot alive pretty much got the entire Arab world to unite against ISIS. So, you know, over time, I think their actions really will tend to undercut their message, because if they're presenting themselves as the defenders of Muslim and yet they're burning Muslims alive, you know, that's a hard message to square.
Of great interest to me is Saudi Arabia. Arabia is, on one hand, gravely threatened by these people, but on the other hand, for decades, the Saudis were funding the export of their particular branch of extraordinarily extreme version of Islam, which has essentially set the seeds for all of these ideologies to grow forth.
But I would say the Saudis look, I mean, it's very significant that they appointed the Prince Mohammed bin Nayef as the deputy crown prince. Therefore, he'll be the next king, effectively, because the next two kings are pretty old, and he's 50, and the king that will be around for a long time is Prince Mohammed bin Nayef, and he's taken a very hard line on this issue. And he's, in the last year or so, the Saudis have criminalized not only, you know, joining ISIS or Al-Qaeda, but even joining the Muslim Brotherhood, which is not a, you know, terrorist organization. And they've also criminalized going to Syria. A number of Saudi clerics have basically said, you know, going to Syria is against Islam. And so they really have had a sort of come to Muhammad moment about this. and it's worked, you know. I mean, for their own reasons. And these countries don't operate for anything other than their own interests. And they can see that the big blowback problem they might have is Saudis getting training in Syria and coming back and doing things in Saudi Arabia, which is what happened during the Iraq War. So they've taken a much, I think, much better stand, as they've seen that it could be a domestic problem for them.
You've been tracking these issues for, well, 1997 is when you met with bin Laden, but prior to that, as you look at the arc of this period that where you've been so deeply studied so deeply these issues, you know, what does the future hold?
I just don't know. You know, Yogi Berra famously said it's hard to make predictions, particularly about the future. But I think the long-term prognosis for ISIS is not good. When you've got 60 countries in a coalition against you, pretty much every Arab country, you know, the long-term prognosis is not good. The medium-term prognosis is they're doing reasonably well. But I think, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, when you have this conversation, I don't think ISIS is going to be controlling large chunks of the Middle East.
Inshallah. Well, Peter Indeed. Bergen, I know you have to run.
Thank you.
So,
okay. Take care.
Thank you.
See you soon. Bye.
Okay, man. Bye-bye.